Good afternoon. Apparently that story about the trans medium, furnishing details about the missing Vermont boy that I talked about a few weeks ago, intrigued the interest of a lot of young listeners, because several letters have come in asking for more stories along those lines. Won't you tell us something about ghosts and haunted houses? Well, the best I can do right now is to tell about a series of unaccountable events which took place up in Fitchburg, Massachusetts, many years ago. It is known in scientific journals as the Mary McCarrick case. Two well-known Fitchburg citizens were in the habit of meeting every afternoon on the benches in the public park, and usually they talked about the weather, their gardens, politics, and so forth. But one September afternoon, Mr. Henry Willis noticed that his neighbor was shaky, pale, and extremely nervous. So he said as he lighted his pipe and puffed, "What's bothering you, John? You look kind of upset." "Well," said his friend, "I am upset. And I hardly know how to begin to describe it. Something strange is happening up to my house. The women folks are scared sick, and I'm beginning to think I'm seeing things. So, well, go ahead and tell me all about it." "Well, for 3 weeks now, we've been hearing strange noises all over the house. Not just creaking boards, but loud thumps and raps and bangs. And last night, the doorbell started ringing when there wasn't anybody around it." Mr. Willis nodded, thinking how easy a short circuit can cause a thing like that, when his friend said, "Now, I don't want you to think I'm out of my head, but this morning I saw a washtub full of wet clothes float right off the bench it was resting on and land over in the corner. And I give you my word, Willis, I wasn't within 20 feet of it." He mopped his brow with his handkerchief and said, "And that ain't all. When I went down cellar, I found 3 heavy soapstone slabs that had always laid across the top of our set tubs, standing in the middle of the floor on end. And you know, Henry, I never take a drink until late in the afternoon, and then just a little one." The man's hands were shaking so he couldn't fill his pipe. And he added grimly, "We don't go in for any of this spiritualist stuff for ghosts up to my house. But, brother, some devilish unseen power is loose up there. And I'd be mighty obliged if you'd come up and stay a few days and give us your opinion on what's going on." Mr. Henry Willis said, "Sure." And as they got up, he asked casually, "How's your new hired girl making out? Didn't I hear she had spells or something?" "Yes, she has been sick a couple of times, and kind of funny, too. She's good as gold and a hard worker. And we figured that just coming over here from the old country, with things so different and being among strangers and all, she got lonesome. Poor girl, she seems to be scared all the time. And I forgot to tell you, Henry, most of the noises we heard last night seemed to come from her room." "Well, is there anything else peculiar?" "No, only that on her recommendation paper that came from the employment agency, it said, Mary McCarrick is sometimes subject to sleepwalking. But we've never had any evidence of that yet. But she cries a lot, poor kid. And I'll bet she's lost 10 pounds since she started working for us. I just can't figure it out." Well, folks, that was the beginning of one of the strangest investigations ever conducted in New England. A case not well known to the public, but familiar to students of psychic phenomena as the famous Fitchburg case. As has happened before and since, a simple, uneducated country girl, without any effort on her part whatsoever, became the instrument of a powerful, unseen influence, causing no end of embarrassment to her employers, relatives, and friends, and great physical and mental suffering to herself. Whenever cases like this come to light, and there have been several famous ones in the last 20 years, all sorts of explanations are offered. In that Nova Scotia case, where all sorts of weird happenings took place in the Hilchey house, it was finally diagnosed as the work of a poltergeist, a sort of a disembodied spirit or a playful ghost who goes around playing pranks. Now, this is not any deduction of mine, because I know nothing about such things. I'm simply reporting what is supposed to have taken place. Well, when it became known that unearthly sights, sounds, and goings-on were taking place in the Fitchburg house, a great many mediums wanted to go up there and hold seances, feeling if they could contact the unknown force, they could solve the mystery. But the conservative family firmly refused. But they did welcome the presence of their neighbor, Mr. Henry Willis, and a few others who dropped in as casual visitors. Mr. Willis got his first surprise when the doorbell started ringing soon after he arrived. He asked for the stepladder, and when Mary brought it, he climbed up and detached the wires. But the bells kept right on ringing. So he unscrewed one of the bells from the wall, wrapped it in paper, and placed it in the kitchen cupboard. And it rang louder than it had rang when it was hanging on the wall. A few minutes later, as the family sat down to supper, loud raps came from that very same cupboard. And all of them heard sounds like knives, forks, and dishes being moved around inside the cupboard. But when Mary McCormick went out of the room, the noises stopped immediately. When she returned and approached the table with a roast beef, one end of the dining room table lifted right up off the floor. So the dishes started to slide, and a few cups and saucers did fall to the floor. The family tried to appear as if they didn't notice anything. But when the teapot began jumping up and down and spilling hot tea, they just couldn't ignore that manifestation, and every one of these things always happened when Mary was in that room. A few days later, when Mr. Willis dropped in, he saw to his amazement a large wooden tub filled with washing rise on its edge and then sort of float in a jerking manner to the floor. And as Mary McCormick came into the room, the cover of the wash boiler flew into the air to be followed by smaller objects, such as brooms, dustpan, and so forth, exactly as though some mischievous child was throwing things about. All this Mr. Willis noted carefully in his notebook, along with the time of day, the temperature, and whether or not Mary McCormick was anywhere near the objects, which moved around without the help of human hands. On August the 6th, according to his diary, while Mary was ironing the long board on which she had just laid a damp tablecloth, folded up with a snap, and the nearly red-hot flat iron leaped from the stove to land on a shelf above the sink some 12 feet away. At this, Mary fainted. And at Mr. Willis' suggestion, she was removed to the house of a neighbor. And while she remained in that house, nothing unusual happened. While she was gone, Mr. Willis secured some small glass cups and put them under the casters of Mary's bed. And as long as the casters of that bed remained in the glass insulators, not a sound was heard. But later, when she was moved to another room and another bed, the unearthly racket commenced all over again. Mr. Willis was justified in jotting in his notebook, it would seem as if some of this phenomena was connected to electricity. On August the 25th, Mr. Willis was called to the house again to view a slab of soapstone, which had, when the family went to bed the night previous, been securely fastened to shelf brackets down in the basement. All the cellar doors had been securely fastened, but when the family came into the kitchen the next morning, there was the slab of soapstone resting across the backs of two kitchen chairs. And the diary continues, the doors to the basement were still open. That in itself was enough to arouse curiosity, to put it mildly. But when they gathered around the breakfast table, the stone slab began to shake and shiver, causing the empty chairs to seesaw, first one way and then the other. And that slab floated across the room and stood unsupported on one end behind the kitchen door. And Mr. Willis wrote in his diary, Mary opened the door and approached the table with a tray. Suddenly there was a sucking sound, like the rush of air, and the slab leaped up and smote the tray right out of her hands. Naturally, the girl screamed as the dishes went crashing. But all of these sounds were drowned out by the thud of that heavy stone shelf when it struck the floor, shaking the entire house. Later that afternoon, a terrific clatter was heard in Mary's room. And going there, they found all the furniture except the bed piled up in a heap in one corner. Mr. Willis removed the chairs, small tables and so forth, and put them out in the hall. And things quieted down until twilight, when all over the house, doors slammed, loud raps came from cupboards, and weird wailing noises came from every dark corner. We felt, Mr. Willis wrote, that a climax was in the making. Came on the 7th. There was scarcely 30 minutes out of the entire day that something supernatural did not take place. The chairs rocking, books sliding in and out of the bookcase, windows which I had fastened myself opened and closed, and pans and pails in the kitchen skidded across. The stove poker leaped from the cover and landed in the coal scuttle, and a carving knife was seen and embed itself into the wallpaper. Now, in spite of all this documented evidence, it's awfully hard to believe all these things, but apparently they happened. Well, Mary McCormick, meanwhile, was on the verge of madness, and when a doctor was brought in, he gave her a sedative and ordered her to be taken to the hospital. A few days later, she was transferred to an asylum, where more drugs were administered, and she fell into a long, deep sleep. 3 weeks later, the physicians reported that after this complete rest, she was much better, having suffered from only two minor nightmares in the hospital. In a few weeks, she was allowed to help around the hospital kitchen and wait on the other patients. Of course, they kept a strict watch on her, but nothing unusual happened, and gradually her health came back. Now, about this time, she began to study, as her education in Ireland had been sadly neglected, and she made excellent progress. The family for whom she'd worked when all this took place wanted to give her a break, and when she begged to be allowed to come back and resume her duties, they didn't have the heart to refuse. So back she went to the house where all the trouble had started. Things went along all right until the night of November 28th, when Mary got up, dressed, and went to her mistress' room and asked if it would be all right to wash the outside windows. Now, it was 2 o'clock in the morning, dark as pitch, and a raw east wind was blowing. They figured they'd better let her have her way, so they said yes. Then they got up to watch. But they couldn't see much on account of its being dark, and they didn't dare strike any light for fear it would upset things. Mary went down into the kitchen, got a pail of hot water, some soap, brushes, rags, and the small stepladder. And without even a candle, she went out and washed and polished all of the outside windows on the lower floor. And she came back into the house, put everything back in place, and returned to her bed, waking up around 12 o'clock at noon, much surprised to find that the little leprechauns, as she called them, had washed and polished the windows. Mr. Henry Willis recorded in his diary, on several nights after this, Mary got up, dressed, and went downstairs to sweep, dust, and wash dishes. And when she couldn't find any dishes to wash, she would take out the silverware and polish it. And one night, he underlined in his notes, she was found studying her lessons. All this, mind you, in total darkness. The family thought something should be done, so she was advised to go back to the asylum. There, her recent troubles were ascribed to sleepwalking. She was released a few days later, went back to the house, and from that time on, nothing unnatural ever happened again. Now you may ask, what caused all this rumpus? Well, I don't know, of course. I don't think it was faked, because it was too unpleasant an experience. And there'd be no point in faking a thing like that, where there wasn't any publicity. The family was very careful to keep all of this out of the papers. They did, however, write to 2 leading universities and ask that some professors be sent up to investigate. But all they got back were insulting letters insinuating the whole thing had been faked, which, according to Mr. Willis, it hadn't been. Now, maybe it was a poltergeist. I've never met one of these critters face to face, but you know, something keeps swiping my matches and hiding my favorite pipe.